What's up, guys? It's David, and if you're listening to the show, that means that you have some interest in the podcast industry and maybe even a show yourself. And I want to tell you about Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. Let's start the show. Hello and welcome to the podcast industry. I'm your host, David. I want to wish everyone a happy holidays wherever you are in the world. I hope you're staying safe. And today we have a very exciting episode. We have our guest. We have Eliana Docterman, who's a reporter for Time who covers media and entertainment. She recently wrote a list of the 10 best podcasts of 2020. And today she's talking to us about the top podcast of the year, her view on celebrity podcasts, and how much content is too much content. So without further ado, here's our interview with Eliana. Eliana, thank you so much for being here. You know, as a, person that covers media and entertainment, I always wonder, from podcasts to TV to movies, how much content do you consume a week?
That's a good question. It depends, basically on what I'm working on. If I'm working on sort of a longer feature that is less, entertainment related, then, still a lot more than the average person probably, but, several hours a night at least. And, podcasts whenever I'm on walks or the subway, when that used to be a thing.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting seeing the stats of, how podcasting actually kind of went down during early in the pandemic because so many people were at home and they weren't commuting. But now as the world, kind of returns back to normal a little bit, we're seeing more people listen to podcasts. And you yourself listen to a ton of podcasts. You wrote an amazing, the 10 best podcasts of 2020. So what's your kind of process for listening to new podcasts or finding new podcasts to listen to?
I mostly Google search and by ear. I keep up with other people who cover podcasts, and I, if someone highlights something in a list or a roundup who I sort of trust, then I will definitely check that out. But a lot of it is obviously podcast referrals on podcasts that I'm already listening to. I usually send around an email every few months to my colleagues on the culture team at Time to see what they're listening to and what I should be catching up on. And then I'll bother, the politics desk and the health desk and as many people as I can find who are listening to different things that I wouldn't obviously listen to, because left to my druthers, I often listen to pop culture podcasts, yeah. But I try to spread out a little bit more than that, by consulting other people.
Yeah. I saw a stat once that said that 70%, of people's favorite podcasts came from word of mouth. So I feel like that really is the best way of someone just saying, "Hey, I'm listening to this. You should listen to it too." And obviously lists like yourself are great, that you wrote, are a great way to find new content. So as like an avid podcast listener, What would be your advice for, members or hosts just starting out that are looking to grow their audience?
I think that that's a very good question. I think that especially now during the pandemic, when it's a lot of the sort of production side of things is a little bit more difficult than it would be if people could be in podcast studios or out and about interviewing people in person a bit more than we can now. Yeah. Because it's really that sort of personal touch of being able to connect with somebody in a room that I think really helps podcasts, especially podcasts that have multiple hosts. You're looking for that energy and sort of two hosts clicking together or a host and a guest clicking together. And that's just a little bit more challenging now that we're all far apart. So I'm hoping that once we can get back into rooms together, or reporters can get out into the field and connect with interviewees a little bit more person to person, that will make things a little bit easier. But I mean, as much as people can facilitate that virtually, I think that really trying to connect on a human level with an interviewee or with a fellow host, or whatever it may be, really helps sort of make the podcast more engaging.
Yeah, I feel like most people would think that podcasts are, you know, pandemic proof because you can just record anywhere. Unlike a big budget movie or scripted TV, you can still record. But you're right. I feel like there is something lost about being in a room with someone. As much as it's great to be virtual and stay safe, there definitely is a lost art about, you know, seeing someone in a room. Do you feel that with like reporting as well, that a lot of people that have had to do interviews have had to do it over Zoom? Does that kind of lose its luster when you're reporting a story?
I mean, as a reporter myself, I can attest to it being more difficult than meeting with somebody in person. I have not gotten to do that nearly as much as I usually do on a yearly basis with interviews and travel and such. And yeah, it's just a little bit more difficult to make that human connection. It's a little bit more difficult to kind of get spontaneous stories from people and that sort of thing. I think that that's a challenge that we're facing in all aspects of our lives right now, yeah. Even Zooming with family and friends and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you miss those little conversations because, you know, when you're on Zoom, you kind of like get right into whatever your the topic at hand is. Unlike when you're in person, there's these like small little moments, like if you have to take an elevator together or walking out of the room. So you kind of lose those like small human moments in the process.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm definitely looking forward to that getting back to normal. And obviously somebody who's starting out right now can't really do anything individually to fix that or about that, but to sort of finding creative ways to facilitate those conversations in a way that is more human can help, whether that's more pre-interviews or that's, you know, finding sort of curveball questions to ask people that sort of shake people out of their normal stasis. I think those sorts of things can probably help.
Yeah, you know, and there's so many amazing stories being told. I've been surprised a little bit, but I shouldn't be, about how many major publications have really gotten into podcasting as well. You know, in your top 10 list, there are podcasts from The Atlantic and The New York Times. Your number one podcast of 2020 was Nice White Parents, with that was produced by The New York Times and Serial. Are you surprised to see how publications are getting into podcasting to reach their audience, as well as print and digital and all the other mediums?
I mean, not really. I think that it's a natural extension of storytelling and reporting. And I think that there is something that is extremely compelling beyond reading, you know, a series of articles, for example, about white privilege in the New York public school system, about actually hearing the voices of people who are exercising that privilege in real time on a recording. It's a little bit different than reading a quote. And so I think that lots of journalists are drawn to that form of storytelling in the same way that a lot of journalists are drawn to video or photo or other means of telling their stories and making their stories connect more with readers. And I think that audio is a really fantastic way to do that. So I'm not surprised. Frankly, I'm surprised it took this long.
Yeah, and you know, the way you were saying how you listen to it on walks, like I'm the same way, where I need to be doing something in addition to listening to the podcast sometimes. So it doesn't really cannibalize my reading of news. It kind of just an extension of that. It's like, okay, I'm not reading it in the morning, but I'm listening to it in the afternoon when I'm on a walk or something.
Yeah, I do think that that's definitely true. It does not have to be an either or situation. I mean, I agree that if you're cooking, you wouldn't be able to read an article while you're doing that at the same time anyway. And now you can get sort of that same newsfeed, and you can curate it in a way that I think if you find the podcast that you like, whether that's a news podcast that's just updating you on the news every day, or if that's a specific topic that you're interested in, it does feel a little bit the same as finding a byline or an author that you really love and reading everything that that person writes. And it's just facilitating it at a different time during a different part of the day. I think especially for people who don't have kids right now. So life is a little less insane than if you're trying to deal with kids in the pandemic. There's a lot of time to fill right now. And so you might as well go on a walk or go on a run and listen to podcasts to fill that time.
Yeah, and on the flip side of like finding your favorite writer and a byline you write, it's also like finding an actor and like a show you like, because a lot of television and movie stars have gotten into podcasting as well. I know that this year you had Kumail Nanjiani's podcast in your top 10 list. And I was just wondering, how do you feel like celebrity podcasters are impacting how the space is seeing podcasts? Because it's, you know, you have a lot of the small indie podcasters, and then you have the major publications and the celebrities. I was just wondering how you're seeing that from a media and entertainment standpoint, the celebrities going into podcasting.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I think most celebrity podcasts are terrible. they're often really self-indulgent and totally wrapped up in their own privilege and bubble. I think that, as with all aspects of pop culture, that's hitting people particularly hard right now, when it's sort of hard to hear, you know, people complain about extremely privileged problems from their podcast studio that they built inside their, you know, manse in LA, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that, but even before that, it does feel like there's a little bit of a lower bar. So the reason, for example, that I put Staying In with Emily and Kumail on my list is because I thought that that was actually a podcast that involved celebrities that was good, and that was extremely exceptional to me, in part because that couple has done podcasting before and they actually seem to like each other. They vibe really well on that podcast. Yeah. And that is also a strangely rare thing to find in celebrity podcasts, celebrity couple podcasts. It's again just like connecting on that human level in a way that feels relatable. And I think that it's really hard to find celebrity podcasts that are relatable at all.
Yeah, and podcasting is, you know, a really cool medium because the barrier to entry is so low. So it's kind of like a democratized playing field where anyone can enter. Like if I started a podcast, this podcast right now will be on the same platform and right next to, you know, the top 10 list that you wrote and everything else and all the celebrity podcasts. So it's kind of cool that with just a few clicks and a microphone, you can kind of have your podcast right next to any celebrity, any publication. But if, you know, if you're making a movie or trying to write a book or anything, you wouldn't be next to the biggest players in the field, right? So it's kind of cool that, that it is such a low barrier, but it obviously, you know, our bar for content is much higher. Like, because there's so many options, you better bring your A game. It better be the best episode because we have so many options to listen to.
Yeah, and as democratized as it is, it's still the case that if a celebrity has millions of followers on Twitter and they tweet out a link to their first podcast episode, they automatically have this large audience that's going to at least try it out and listen to it in a way that you don't necessarily have if you are not a huge celebrity.
Yeah, so, exactly, yeah.
So it definitely, you know, as with all systems that exist in the world, there are definitely sort of different levels of advantage and disadvantage that you can enter into. And, you know, I hope that by the lists that I do and a lot of the coverage that my colleagues do, that we're hopefully highlighting the things that are genuinely better, not just the things that are popular or just, you know, have a celebrity face and therefore have more attention.
Yeah, and, you know, I feel like with so much content, you know, I can't not ask you about, you know, streaming and what you're watching and kind of your views on that. Do you feel like there's too many streaming platforms, too much content on that side as well? Or what do you see happening coming down the line? I know HBO and Warner Brothers just announced they're doing everything on HBO Max in 2021. Like, do you feel like we have too much to watch and too much to listen to now?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely too much content. I have a lot of thoughts and feelings about the HBO Max announcement, mostly because I'm worried that you know, it's essentially AT&T owns HBO Max. It's in their vested interest to have us streaming as much as possible, as opposed to going to movie theaters as much as possible. Yeah. And they're already running into some problems with the actors and directors who directed these movies and acted in these movies that they are putting straight to streaming, who traditionally would make movie on their box offices. And so I think that that's going to be a huge fight, but it's what's we're seeing right now is sort of a fight for either a more curated experience in movie theaters or a more sprawling experience on streaming. And on the one hand, I don't want to complain about having lots of content and lots of good content. On the other hand, I do really value being able to go inside a movie theater, have all the movies go off, and just concentrate for 2 straight hours on something and have the really communal experience of watching something together. That's something I feel that we're missing right now in all aspects of our pop culture consumption life, is being able to all gasp at the same moment or laugh at the same moment at the same thing. And so I worry about that disappearing from our lives.
I feel like it won't disappear from, you know, a certain generation. Like, I will go back to the theaters, but I feel like there is a generation that grew up on watching stuff on their phone. And they're like, the phone, the theater, like, it's all the same. And I'm like, no, IMAX is much different than a phone. Like, it's a different experience.
Yeah, I also think it affects, like, how a director makes a movie. Whether they're thinking about somebody whose attention they constantly have to keep because they're at home, they're on their phones, they're on their computers, they're getting up to go to the bathroom to get food, whatever, versus someone whose full attention is absorbed in a movie at a moment. And also just like, I don't know, there's an example that I have used before is I really value the experiences of like, I love the Mission Impossible movies, which I realize that they're like dumb and over the top, but they're delightful. And there's a moment in the most recent Mission Impossible movie where Armie Hammer gets struck by lightning. And it was a moment where I was in an IMAX movie theater and the entire theater just went dead silent, like gasped dead silent at that moment. And then people started screaming like, what the hell? And it's just like thinking about that, or thinking about going to Get Out and everybody reacting at the same time to this climactic moments and like getting up and cheering or, you know, screaming. I think that those are the things that, those are the memories that I feel have such value, even for younger people. there's 100%, the reason why people went and saw Avengers Endgame all together. Like, people wanted to have the experience of seeing how that ended and experiencing it with other people around them, not just, you know, on their phone in bed. I think we've diverged off the topic of podcasts, but it's definitely something that is top of my mind right now and I'm genuinely concerned about.
Kind of interesting though, because that communal experience is kind of how I do see movies, where podcasts is such a intimate experience. Like, you have the headphones in your ear, you're talking to someone almost on a one-on-one level, where you're kind of having this conversation that people are listening into, and it's so much more intimate versus in a movie theater. It's really, I think that movies are meant to be consumed as a community. So I think that it kind of does go hand in hand in how creators kind of do create for the medium that they have. Do you remember the last movie that you saw though in theaters?
Yeah. So I go to a lot of screenings for my job. It's kind of which is sort of a different experience because it's a much smaller group of people. The last movie I saw in actual theaters was Birds of Prey, which, you know, okay, if I could go back and, you know, decide what last movie I would see in theaters, that would not have been it. Though my husband reminded me that the other day that the last movie he saw in movie theaters was Rise of Skywalker, which is a movie that frustrated me to no end. And so same. I collapsed on the ground when I heard that, because it made me so, so sad. But one of the last movies I saw in a screening, this was a little bit before that actually, was Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which is a terrific movie. And I'm very glad I saw that on a big screen, and people should seek it out, even if they're at home on small screens.
My last movie I saw was Ford versus Ferrari, and I thought I was inside of a car. It was so loud in the movie theater.
Yeah, that checks out. I think actually, now that I think about it, the last movie I actually saw, this was in a screening, but it was Invisible Man, which is, you know, a good movie to see in sort of a communal dark, you know, jumping out of your seat experience.
And before I let you go, what podcasts are you listening to now, outside of your top 10 for the year? What are you listening to?
Oh, that's a good question. I should actually sort of pull up my queue. I mean, I've been listening to a lot of You're Wrong About and sort of catching up on the back log that I had of those shows, which has been, you know, a really terrific show for the past couple of years. And, you know, just a lot, frankly, giving myself kind of a break by listening to sort of a lot of movie podcasts. I'll also do this thing where I will watch a movie or TV show, and then I will search the name of that movie or TV show once I'm done and try to find just episodes of people talking about that thing that I just watched to sort of help me process it and think about it more. So I've been doing a lot of that.
Yeah, and then they tell you about all the Easter eggs you missed the entire series.
Yeah, something like that.
So seriously, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Great, thank you.
Once again, thank you so much to Eliana for taking the time to sit down with us. If you listen to this podcast and you enjoyed what we're talking about, please rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow us on social media. If you have a show yourself, I suggest that you check out Podgo and everything we're doing over there. And I hope to see you next episode.